Chapter 75. A good-humored Christmas chapter, containing an account of a wedding, and some other sports beside, which, although in their way, even as good customs as marriage itself, are not quite so religiously kept up, in these degenerate times, as brisk as bees, if not altogether as light as fairies, did the four Pickwickians assemble on the morning of the 22nd day of December, in the year of grace in which these, their faithfully recorded adventures, were undertaken and accomplished. Christmas was close at hand, in all his bluff and hearty honesty. It was the season of hospitality, merriment, and open-heartedness. The old year was preparing, like an ancient philosopher, to call his friends around him, and amidst the sound of feasting and revelry, to pass gently and calmly away. Gay and merry was the time, and right gay and merry were at least four of the numerous hearts that were gladdened by its coming. And numerous indeed are the hearts to which Christmas brings a brief season of happiness and enjoyment. How many families, whose members have been dispersed and scattered far and wide, in the restless struggles of life, are then reunited, and meet once again in that happy state of companionship and mutual goodwill, which is a source of such pure and unalloyed delight, and one so incompatible with the cares and sorrows of the world, that the religious belief of the most civilized nations, and the rude traditions of the roughest savages, alike number it among the first joys of a future condition of existence, provided for the blessed and happy. How many old recollections, and how many dormant sympathies, does Christmas time awaken? We write these words now, many miles distant from the spot at which, year after year, we met on that day, a merry and joyous circle. Many of the hearts that throbbed so gaily then have ceased to beat. Many of the looks that shone so brightly then have ceased to glow. The hands we grasped have grown cold. The eyes we sought have hid their luster in the grave. And yet the old house, the room, the merry voices and smiling faces, the jest, the laugh, the most minute and trivial circumstances connected with those happy meetings, crowd upon our mind at each recurrence of the season, as if the last assemblage had been but yesterday. Happy, happy Christmas, that can win us back to the delusions of our childish days, that can recall to the old man the pleasures of his youth, that can transport the sailor and the traveler, thousands of miles away, back to his own fireside and his quiet home. But we are so taken up, and occupied with the good qualities of this Saint Christmas, that we are keeping Mr. Pickwick and his friends waiting in the cold on the outside of the Muggleton coach, which they have just attained, well wrapped up in great coats, shawls, and comforters. The portmanteaus and carpetbags have been stowed away, and Mr. Weller and the guard are endeavoring to insinuate into the foreboot a huge codfish several sizes too large for it, which is snugly packed up in a long brown basket with a layer of straw over the top, and which has been left to the last, in order that he may repose in safety on the half dozen barrels of real native oysters, all the property of Mr. Pickwick, which have been arranged in regular order at the bottom of the receptacle. The interest displayed in Mr. Pickwick's countenance is most intense, as Mr. Weller and the guard try to squeeze the codfish into the boot, first head first, and then tail first, and then top upward, and then bottom upward, and then sideways, and then long ways, all of which artifices the implacable codfish sturdily resists, until the guard accidentally hits him in the very middle of the basket, whereupon he suddenly disappears into the boot, and with him, the head and shoulders of the guard himself, who, not calculating upon so sudden a cessation of the passive resistance of the codfish, experiences a very unexpected shock, to the unsmotherable delight of all the porters and bystanders. Upon this, Mr. Pickwick smiles with great good humor, and drawing a shilling from his waistcoat pocket, begs the guard, as he picks himself out of the boot, to drink his health in a glass of hot brandy and water, at which the guard smiles too, and Messrs. Snodgrass, Winkle, and Tubman all smile in company. The guard and Mr. Weller disappear for 5 minutes, most probably to get a hot brandy and water, for they smell very strongly of it. When they return, the coachman mounts to the box. Mr. Weller jumps up behind. The Pickwickians pull their coats round their legs, and their shawls over their noses. The helpers pull the horse cloths off. The coachman shouts out a cheery "all right," apostrophe, and away they go. They have rumbled through the streets, and jolted over the stones, and at length reach the wide and open country. The wheels skim over the hard and frosty ground, and the horses, bursting into a canter at a smart crack of the whip, step along the road, as if the load behind them coach, passengers, codfish, oyster barrels, and all were but a feather at their heels. They have descended a gentle slope, and enter upon a level, as compact and dry as a solid block of marble, 2 miles long. Another crack of the whip, and on they speed, at a smart gallop, the horses tossing their heads and rattling the harness, as if in exhilaration at the rapidity of the motion, while the coachman, holding whip and reins in one hand, takes off his hat with the other, and resting it on his knees, pulls out his handkerchief, and wipes his forehead, partly because he has a habit of doing it, and partly because it's as well, to show the passengers how cool he is, and what an easy thing it is to drive 4 in hand, when you have had as much practice as he has. Having done this very leisurely, otherwise the effect would be materially impaired, he replaces his handkerchief, pulls on his hat, adjusts his gloves, squares his elbows, cracks the whip again, and on they speed, more merrily than before. A few small houses, scattered on either side of the road, beckon the entrance to some town or village. The lively notes of the guard's key bugle vibrate in the clear cold air, and wake up the old gentleman inside, who, carefully letting down the window sash halfway, and standing sentry over the air, takes a short peep out, and then carefully pulling it up again, informs the other inside that they are going to change directly, on which the other inside wakes himself up, and determines to postpone his next nap until after the stoppage. Again the bugle sounds lustily forth, and rouses the cottager's wife and children, who peep out at the house door, and watch the coach till it turns the corner, when they once more crouch round the blazing fire, and throw on another log of wood against father comes home, while father himself, a full mile off, has just exchanged a friendly nod with the coachman, and turned round to take a good long stare at the vehicle as it whirls away. And now the bugle plays a lively air as the coach rattles through the ill-paved streets of a country town, and the coachman, undoing the buckle which keeps his ribbons together, prepares to throw them off the moment he stops. Mr. Pickwick emerges from his coat collar, and looks about him with great curiosity, perceiving which, the coachman informs Mr. Pickwick of the name of the town, and tells him it was market day yesterday, both of which pieces of information Mr. Pickwick retails to his fellow passengers, whereupon they emerge from their coat collars too, and look about them also. Mr. Winkle, who sits at the extreme edge, with one leg dangling in the air, is nearly precipitated into the street, as the coach twists round the sharp corner by the cheesemonger's shop, and turns into the marketplace, and before Mr. Snodgrass, who sits next to him, has recovered from his alarm, they pull up at the inn yard where the fresh horses, with cloths on, are already waiting. The coachman throws down the reins, and gets down himself, and the other outside passengers drop down also, except those who have no great confidence in their ability to get up again, and they remain where they are, and stamp their feet against the coach to warm them looking, with longing eyes and red noses, at the bright fire in the inn bar, and the sprigs of holly with red berries which ornament the window. But the guard is delivered at the corn dealer's shop, the brown paper packet he took out of the little pouch which hangs over his shoulder by a leathern strap, and has seen the horses carefully put to, and has thrown on the pavement the saddle which was brought from London on the coach roof, and has assisted in the conference between the coachman and the hostler about the grey mare that herded off 4 leg last Tuesday, and he and Mr. Weller are all right behind, and the coachman is all right in front, and the old gentleman inside, who has kept the window down full 2 inches all this time, has pulled it up again, and the cloths are off, and they are all ready for starting, except the two stout gentlemen, apostrophe whom the coachman inquires after with some impatience. Hereupon the coachman, and the guard, and Sam Weller, and Mr. Winkle, and Mr. Snodgrass, and all the hostlers, and every one of the idlers, who are more in number than all the others put together, shout for the missing gentleman as loud as they can bawl. A distant response is heard from the yard, and Mr. Pickwick and Mr. Tupman come running down it, quite out of breath, for they have been having a glass of ale apiece, and Mr. Pickwick's fingers are so cold that he has been full 5 minutes before he could find the sixpence to pay for it. The coachman shouts an admonitory now then, gentlemen, apostrophe the guard re-echoes it. The old gentleman inside thinks it a very extraordinary thing that people will get down when they know there isn't time for it. Mr. Pickwick struggles up on one side, Mr. Tupman on the other, Mr. Winkle cries all right, and off they start. Shawls are pulled up, coat collars are readjusted, the pavement ceases, the houses disappear, and they are once again dashing along the open road, with the fresh clear air blowing in their faces, and gladdening their very hearts within them. Such was the progress of Mr. Pickwick and his friends by the Muggleton Telegraph, on their way to Dingley Dell, and at 3 o'clock that afternoon they all stood high and dry, safe and sound, hale and hearty, upon the steps of the Blue Lion, having taken on the road quite enough of ale and brandy to enable them to bid defiance to the frost that was binding up the earth in its iron fetters, and weaving its beautiful network upon the trees and hedges. Mr. Pickwick was busily engaged in counting the barrels of oysters, and superintending the disinterment of the codfish, when he felt himself gently pulled by the skirts of the coat. Looking round, he discovered that the individual who resorted to this mode of catching his attention was no other than Mr. Wardle's favorite page, better known to the readers of this unvarnished history by the distinguishing appellation of the Fat Boy. Aha! Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mr. Pickwick. Aha! Apostrophe, apostrophe, said the Fat Boy. As he said it, he glanced from the codfish to the oyster barrels, and chuckled joyously. He was fatter than ever. Well, you look rosy enough, my young friend, apostrophe, said Mr. Pickwick. I've been asleep, right in front of the taproom fire, apostrophe, replied the Fat Boy, who had heated himself to the color of a new chimney pot, in the course of an hour's nap. Master sent me over with the shay cart, to carry your luggage up to the house. He'd ha sent some saddle horses, but he thought you'd rather walk, being a cold day. Apostrophe, yes, yes, apostrophe, said Mr. Pickwick hastily, for he remembered how they had traveled over nearly the same ground on a previous occasion. Yes, we would rather walk. Here, Sam. Apostrophe, sir, apostrophe, said Mr. Weller. Help Mr. Wardle's servant to put the packages into the cart, and then ride on with him. We will walk forward at once. Apostrophe, having given this direction, and settled with the coachman, Mr. Pickwick and his three friends struck into the footpath across the fields, and walked briskly away, leaving Mr. Weller and the Fat Boy confronted together for the first time. Sam looked at the Fat Boy with great astonishment, but without saying a word, and began to stow the luggage rapidly away in the cart, while the Fat Boy stood quietly by, and seemed to think it a very interesting sort of thing, to see Mr. Weller working by himself. There, apostrophe, said Sam, throwing in the last carpet bag, there they are. Apostrophe, yes, apostrophe, said the Fat Boy, in a very satisfied tone, there they are. Apostrophe, well, young 20-stone, apostrophe, said Sam, you're a nice specimen of a prize boy, you are. Apostrophe, apostrophe, thankee, apostrophe, said the Fat Boy. You ain't got nothing on your mind as makes you fret yourself, have you? Apostrophe, apostrophe, inquired Sam. Not as I knows on, apostrophe replied the fat boy. I should rather ha thought, to look at you, that you was a laborin' under an unrequited attachment to some young woman, apostrophe said Sam. The fat boy shook his head. Well, apostrophe said Sam, I am glad to hear it. Do you ever drink anything? Apostrophe, I likes eating better, apostrophe replied the boy. Ah, apostrophe said Sam, I should ha supposed that. But what I mean is, should you like a drop of anything as it warm you, but I suppose you never was cold, with all them elastic fixtures, was you? Apostrophe apostrophe, sometimes, apostrophe replied the boy, and I likes a drop of something, when it's good. Apostrophe, oh, you do you? Apostrophe apostrophe said Sam, come this way then. Apostrophe, the blue lion tap was soon gained, and the fat boy swallowed a glass of liquor without so much as winking a feat which considerably advanced him in Mr. Weller's good opinion. Mr. Weller having transacted a similar piece of business on his own account, they got into the cart. Can you drive? Apostrophe, apostrophe said the fat boy. I should rather think so, apostrophe replied Sam. There, then, apostrophe said the fat boy, putting the reins in his hand, and pointing up a lane, it's as straight as you can go, you can't miss it. Apostrophe, with these words, the fat boy laid himself affectionately down by the side of the codfish, and, placing an oyster barrel under his head for a pillow, fell asleep instantaneously. Well, apostrophe said Sam, of all the cool boys ever I set my eyes on, this here young gentleman is the coolest. Come, wake up, young Dropsy. Apostrophe, but as young Dropsy evinced no symptoms of returning animation, Sam Weller sat himself down in front of the cart, and starting the old horse with a jerk of the rein, jogged steadily on, towards the manor farm. Meanwhile, Mr. Pickwick and his friends, having walked their blood into active circulation, proceeded cheerfully on. The paths were hard. The grass was crisp and frosty. The air had a fine, dry, bracing coldness. And the rapid approach of the gray twilight, slate-colored as a better term in frosty weather, made them look forward with pleasant anticipation to the comforts which awaited them at their hospitable entertainers. It was the sort of afternoon that might induce a couple of elderly gentlemen, in a lonely field, to take off their greatcoats and play at leapfrog in pure lightness of heart and gaiety, and we firmly believe that had Mr. Tupman at that moment proffered a back, apostrophe Mr. Pickwick would have accepted his offer with the utmost avidity. However, Mr. Tupman did not volunteer any such accommodation, and the friends walked on, conversing merrily. As they turned into a lane they had to cross, the sound of many voices burst upon their ears, and before they had even had Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.